Ladies and gentlemen, we are coming back to Atlanta.
Right now.
Whoa. Mark your calendars because the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts, but we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robey,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
I am so excited about this podcast, The Bright Side. You guys are giving people a chance to shine a light on their lives, shine a light on a little advice that they want to share.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
Every family has an origin story, one passed down through the generations. Mine happens to be a mystery involving my great-great-grandmother left behind in Sicily. I'm Joe Piazza, and my new podcast will transport you to the gorgeous island of Sicily as I trace my roots back through a whodunit for the ages. Listen to The Sicilian Inheritance on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, Christy.
Oh, hi, Will.
How are you?
I feel like a hot pile of garbage.
Oh, that's great. Well, if it makes you feel any better, you look like a hot pile of garbage.
I'm kidding.
You look, I've never seen you not look amazing. You look awesome even now. You're sick, aren't you?
I am. So basically I had, I stayed behind, which we should definitely talk about because we haven't touched base on how San Francisco went.
Yeah.
And we're such a tag team that, I don't know how you survived without me.
I barely did. Everyone missed you so much. No, really. You have no idea how the fans were really bummed you weren't there.
Oh my gosh.
And we're so looking forward to it and really wanted to see you. So not to make you feel guilty, but you ruined lots of people's lives.
More garbage on top of garbage. You're just throwing garbage on a dumpster fire.
Everybody understood. Everybody, of course, understood. That's what you do when you have, you know, little kids and family and everything going on around you. I totally understand that. But people were bummed you couldn't be there. Yeah, people were bummed.
Tell me, let's review. So you went to San Francisco.
I went to Fan Expo San Francisco, which was a first year convention. And sometimes first year conventions are hit or miss. You know, they're trying to find their audience sometimes. It was great. The people were like every convention we've been to, the people were incredibly friendly, so accepting and loving. I've always said I wish the entire world could be like a convention. I recorded an episode with Steve Bloom.
Oh, my gosh. How did that go?
It was so much fun. We had a giant live podcast room. It was, I would say, by the end, 90% full. Once again, the audience stepped up. Joe Woes drawing for us live. Everybody doing the voices. It was, we had I'm not going to say who, but a very special voiceover guest who popped in the audience, who then jumped in line. It was a ridiculous amount of fun, not to make pile even more hot garbage on top of your hot garbage. But
no, I'm just happy for the podcast.
It was great. No, it was great. Yeah. It went, and we gave you several shout outs in that. Aww. We were mean to you, saying we were glad you weren't there.
I'm sure. I can expect that. That's what happens if you don't show up.
We missed you a ton, but it was.
Yeah.
It was a lot of fun.
I just don't know how.
We'll figure it out. We always do. It's not a problem, but it was really a lot of fun. It really was.
That's so good. It's really like we're in this place right now with our podcast here that we're trying to get the word out. And so, you know, I don't know if you've been an avid listener. You are, yes.
Oh, I didn't know if you were talking
listening
to me. Oh,
to
gotcha.
Us speaking.
Okay, gotcha.
And if there are avid listeners out there that do want to, like, you know, promote it and throw up a hashtag and get the word out, I mean, we really appreciate that. I appreciate
that would
a good
be great.
Review, right? Like on Apple or wherever.
But it was, the whole thing was nuts. For instance, and you'll hear this in the interview, but Steve Bloom holds 4 Guinness Book of World Records when it comes to voiceover.
What?
Yeah. And
how
he didn't know 3 of them.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
It was great.
His manager also came up and was like, you know, he holds it. It was like most times ever playing Wolverine in video games and blah, blah, blah. Most prolific voice actor. He's done something like 600 voiceover roles. I mean, it's insane.
That's insane.
Yeah. So he held all these kind. He was. And of course, I've also known him for 15, 20 years, and he's my D&D buddy. And his real life wife is my D&D wife. So
wait, what now? What are the nerds doing?
Our characters on Critical Role are married and have kids.
Oh my goodness.
But he married her in real life as a woman, a beautiful woman. I married her on D&D as a tiefling.
Which is a elf or something.
Oh, Christy. I don't have time to explain the tiefling race to you, Christy.
Don't you see that? Look, you know what? I am in love with Critical Role and what they're doing. I actually, I've known Sam Riegel like my whole life.
Yeah.
And his sister, Eden, she was my Spanish tutor, and Sam was like always this like really cool older brother type. And Sam Riegel
Have that vibe, doesn't he?
He totally does. I mean, he went to Harvard and he was such a smart guy and just such a good person always. And it's so great to see him. Like, literally, we're talking about a guy who was like, went to Harvard, like I said, really wonderful son, really wonderful brother. And then on top of that, he was like in the a cappella group at Harvard. And they were they were like almost famous. They were so good. So it's so weird to me that Sam's got this like whole new life.
He's an incredible voiceover director.
That's what I was saying. Like, that was really strange to me that I just bumped into him and I'm like, this is really weird. He's a director. I saw him at the studios, not LA studios, but those other studios that they're using now. Is it called Magnolia?
Well, no. There's some that are Magnolia Studios, there's some that are Bang Zoom, there's some that Outlook. Mm-hmm. But there's probably 7 or 8 that you go to mostly.
Yeah.
You know, it's like usually you'll get, it's like you're going to Out Loud or you're going to Magnolia or you're going to Bang Zoom or you're going, and it's like, after a while, you're kind of like at the same 5 or 6.
Right.
But there's hundreds, you know, it's always, and you'll always hear, you'll do some project that you don't know about. And it's like, you end up in somebody's kind of garage and you're like, this is certainly interesting. But the whole thing they're doing over there at Critical Role and everything that's going on. It was fun. It was fun. We certainly missed you. The fans certainly missed you. But we had a blast. But so here's the thing we wanted to talk about a little bit on this very special episode of I Hear Voices. Not like a very special episode of Different Strokes, but a very special episode of I Hear Voices. Where for the first time we realized Christy and I have never really talked to each other about our voiceover gigs. Mm-hmm. If you don't mind, I'd like to start, Christy, with the spotlight pointed at you.
Oh man. Okay, sure. That's cool.
We know each other well enough. We'll be brief for both of us. We'll see. There's your plants. Your plants are going well.
he makes fun of me because we do Zooms as well here. And so I moved into a new house and I didn't have any pictures on the wall. And then I put pictures on the wall 1 week.
Yeah.
And then I literally put this tree behind me. It's this fake ficus tree.
Yeah.
And
Hashtag fake ficus.
And now I'm getting my head caught in it. Attempt to make it homey.
It's good. Because when you first, the first time you recorded in there, it looked like you were being held against your will. So this is.
And I don't even have the light on anymore. Oh my God. Anyway.
I think we're good. So Christy Carlson Romano, I'm very curious. What was the first voiceover gig you ever did? And how did you get into the world of voiceover?
Interestingly enough, I started doing voice acting when I was very young. I have still to this day, I have a recording of me doing my first audiobook when I was about 12.
Wow. Do you remember the book? What was the book?
I think it was Junie B. Jones.
Okay.
And I think it's like a children's, like it was some sort of a children's story anthology. And I remember a lot about that experience because I had done a lot of theater and I had done a lot of even some independent films and stuff like that, 12, 13. Mm-hmm. But being caught in sort of this little room, this padded room where it's so quiet and it's so calm.
Yeah, isn't it wonderful?
It was a really interesting experience and introduction. And then like you're very, you know, when you're a little performer, like you've got a lot of energy, you've got a lot of thoughts. And then, like you said, you're put into a room and you're tasked with reading an entire book. Now, mind you, I guess I was a pretty good reader to be like 12 and doing like, you know.
Sure. You must
but
have
it
been.
was I don't think it was advanced enough. And I had been reading scripts my whole life since, you know, I was like seven or so. So I think that I think about my kids and she's just about to turn six. And I'm like, we're not there yet. She couldn't possibly, she's not reading really.
Right.
So yeah, I think, you know, 12 is a really good age. I think as a, as an early introduction to even something as simple as, you know, some sort of small book reading experience, or I here's the thing. So when people ask me about like, okay, on camera, are you going to put your kids in the business and all that stuff? Obviously it's a complex issue, but at the same time, I think when it comes to voice acting, and we've talked about this in the past, the voiceover community is so positive.
Yeah.
And it's very, very sweet. Like I remember Tim Ditlow, I'm going to say a specific name. He was the head of Random House Books on Tape. And they had just started to emerge as a sort of force for audiobooks. Audiobooks started to become something yeah. real. And so, you know, we're going back how many years? I'm 38, you know? And so this was new, you know, this was kind of a new technology. The voice recording was not, but for the purposes and the protocols of sitting down and reading a book, that was sort of becoming a booming business at that point. So anyway, I just remember sitting there and drinking tea because I drank a lot of tea, even from a young age, from being like a singer and doing theater. And I just remember, I think somebody got me a croissant. So here's the interesting thing, right? Like, I think there's this saying of like, I think a therapist told me this once upon a time. When you go into a room and you sit in a certain chair, you're more than likely when you re-enter that room, even if it's a different day, to sit back in that chair, that same chair. You tend to like repeat.
Oh, okay.
And I've noticed that, you know, people are creatures of habit. So for sure. me, the tea and like a croissant, if it's like a long record, there's certain things that actually help that may not help say your voice, but they help sort of activate my abilities to like focus on the work.
So it's almost Pavlovian for you where it's like you sit down, you're in the chair, you've got the tea, you've got the croissant. As they say it, and with the perfect lamination because the butter's been folded in just right.
Or something hell's to pay, you know.
Or exactly. And so that brings you right into like voiceover mind.
I think so. I think nice. That like when I'm in the booth, which we really've never talked about, I feel very safe. I feel very almost like I'm in utero.
No, that makes sense. It kind of makes sense because it is. In a way, it's almost like a working sensory deprivation tank because it's you know, usually not really bright. Sometimes it is, but usually not really bright, especially now after the pandemic when I'm one of those people where even during the pandemic, I went to the studio. I observed all the protocols, but I do not like recording from my house. I like recording podcasts from my house because there's a homey, comfy feeling about being in my room, in my booth here and recording. But when I'm working, I want to feel like I'm working, and I don't feel like I'm working when I'm working from home. That's okay. What I like about the podcast, because I don't want a podcast to feel like work. I want it to feel like a conversation.
Exactly.
But when
You're
I'm
very
working,
good at that.
I want to work. And so I want to put on pants. I want to put on shoes. I want to get in my car. I want to drive to a place. I want to get out. I want to put on my headphones. I want to work.
Do you think that Kevin Conroy, who has mm-hmm. since passed, do you think that sort of protocol and sort of, do you think that influenced you in terms of your relationship
to? I very much. I think not only that, but it's also, it was before I even met Kevin, who was obviously my voiceover guru. I'd been working with William Daniels, Mr. Feeney on Boy Meets World. And he taught us professionalism. Like, you are a professional. You are there early. You are prepared to go. You do not keep other actors waiting. It does not matter if you are 12. This is what you do. You are a professional. So I took that to every aspect of the industry. So voiceover, some of the greatest actors in the world, but you do meet some that can show up a little late, haven't read the script, that kind of stuff. And it's like, okay, that's one way to look at it. It's just not how I look at it. Mm-hmm. But I get what you're saying exactly about that feeling, especially now, as I was saying, with the pandemic, I'm still going to the studio, but you're no longer in the giant studios that they're used to house 15 actors. Now you're in a much smaller studio and they shut that door behind you. And there's like, it's like part of the air gets sucked into the room and you're like, the
it's door like an shuts. Audible sound.
Yes.
And you're like, oh, I'm here to work now.
I'm here. And the door mm-hmm. shuts and all the sound goes away. You're focused on the screen in front of you or the pages in front of you, the microphones in front of you. The only voice you hear comes through your headphones. It's like a distant kind of echo. And I get exactly what you're saying. If you are in utero, it's the doctor. You hear the doctor through, you know, as you're being born going like, all right, get ready to push. Like that's the voice in your head. But the joy is when it's all done, you don't have a stupid kid. You've got a great cartoon. So that's the awesomeness.
So, I was very young when we think back to it. And it's like, I just have a very visceral memory of what that felt like because, yeah. and then honoring my love of that experience, I felt even more and more blessed to be in rooms in LA because where I was doing, this was all in New York. I was okay. doing a lot of my recording and where I was
yeah.
living.
Well, where we were Connecticut kids. So that's where you went. That's where you went to work. You went to New York.
Well, and I also went to performing arts school. So I was already in New York.
Right.
Of the time.
Yeah.
So it would be like, okay, I'm going to cut school or I leave early and I go to my recording session, down on 9th or 10th or wherever because like the recording area is in the Valley in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
But it's very different where they'll record in New York City.
Yeah.
Like Soho had a lot of voice.
Hell's Kitchen
booths.
Did too, right? Like around 55th mm-hmm. and 9th, 55th and 10th, like that whole kind of area.
Yeah.
Yeah. That Unitel video around there, all that kind of stuff. You did a lot of stuff around there too.
Yeah. A bit more scattered, but yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You know, and also too, in New York, it's more like Mad Men kind of ad stuff.
Sure.
And
sure.
I remember going on voice acting auditions, which were mostly not jingles, but they were mostly commercials and stuff like that for a long time. I think that's what my introduction to voice acting was. But we've talked about it a lot on the podcast. And I think that my initial way in to turning a phrase or trying to get a job, which I started to get pretty good at, even in my younger years before going to LA. I think it's just a matter of being a singer and knowing that intonation is helpful. It's like a one for one. It's sure. a song. And there's another thing that when I started acting, they say, well, read your script as many times as possible, right? Like at least 10 times before you even start trying to memorize the lines or perform it. And I'm sure that's some method, but I don't know which one it is. And so I didn't necessarily read a ton of times, but I think I had a natural inclination to sort of honor the sing-songiness of mm-hmm. a script. So I think even if you don't have a ton of training, you can, and you're a singer, I think you can probably approach, you know, voice
sense.
Acting easier. Yeah, that's my.
Yeah, I didn't, that whole read your script 10 times, that I read my script, obviously, every time, but I don't want to overread. I don't want to over-rehearse. I don't want to read a script 10 times. I want to read it once, and then I want to keep it fresh.
I was going to say, do you stop at a certain point and you're saying, I'm doing this too much?
Oh, yeah. Oh, there's times where some of the worst auditions I've ever had in my life were things that I over-rehearsed.
Interesting.
It's just, oh my God, I want this so bad. So I'm gonna rehearse 15 times. And then you get in there and your mind is like, wait, I didn't do that in the rehearsal I wanted to do. Why is that beat different? Why? And then you start second guessing yourself. Whereas if mm-hmm. it's still fresh, you're still finding the beats. And, you know, that's like one of the first pieces of advice I was given as an on-camera actor as a kid. I was, you know, 11, whatever it was, I don't care how many times you audition for something, always hold your script. Mm-hmm. Because in the mind of the people watching your audition, it means you are not yet off book. So there's more places to go with the performance than just what you see in the room, as opposed to you walk in, you're off book. Hey, this is what I got. They are in their minds. They're like, this is all we're ever going to get because this is as rehearsed as we're going to get with this kid.
Yeah.
So that kind of always hold your script always resonated with me because it's that psychological, like, oh, there's still more to come from this actor because they have yet to reach the potential of this character. You can tell they're still on book.
Wait, so but are you actually off book holding the paper?
It would depend on the role. It would depend.
Because I get
role.
Anxiety when I hold the paper. And...
Oh, really? I love holding some. I love not having to think about my hands. So having something to occupy my
that
hands.
That makes sense.
I'm a big fan of that, too.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robey,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
Thank you for taking the light, and you're going to shine it all over the world, and it makes me really happy.
I never imagined that I would get the chance to carry this honor and help be a part of this legacy.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
I'm preaching to somebody today who is waiting for God to give you your next step. And you don't know what it is yet. You need God to show you your next step. Because God, I can't stay where I am, like I am, where it is. This isn't going to work. I have to move on, but I don't know where. A lot of time you'll use it as an excuse. Well, I don't know how. I don't know where. I don't know what. God, if you show me. God, if you tell me. God, if... No. You know enough right now. And if you needed to know more, he would show you.
Hey, this is Stephen Furtick. I want to invite you to listen to my podcast, Elevation with Stephen Furtick. I am here to help you for the battles that you face in life, for the times when you feel discouraged, for the times that you need guidance from God. I want to give you the truth of what he says about you to help you rise to your full potential. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and I'm back for another season of my podcast, Climbing in Heels. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as fully obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. My podcast, Climbing in Heels, is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season, we're taking things up a notch. I'll be talking to some incredible women across so many industries, from models and beauty industry stars to doctors, entrepreneurs, and TV personalities. Climbing in Heels is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Every week, listeners will be able to ask me any questions. I'm answering it all. My life is absolutely crazy with so much going on, and I'm so beyond excited to bring you along for the ride. Whether we're talking red carpet looks, current trends, or products I'm obsessed with, I'm here to be your fashion fairy godmother. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You know what? I'm actually interested. What is one of your worst auditions?
I know my exact worst audition ever.
Okay, you gotta tell.
It was for on camera though. It wasn't for.
That's okay. Mine was for theater, and I'll tell you.
Okay, I have two. One that was funny. One that was horrifying. So the funny one.
I have
one...
two as well. Okay.
Okay, good. So the funny one was I was a huge Family Ties fan. Like I love Michael J. Fox and Family Ties was all I ever wanted to be. Michael J. Fox and Family Ties and Alan Alda and MASH were like the reasons I became an actor. So Gary David Goldberg, who created Family Ties, was creating a new show called Brooklyn Bridge. And I was going to New York to audition for Gary David Goldberg himself. And I was mortified, excited, every superlative you could think of. And in my audition piece, I had to walk downstairs and the character playing my mom said, "Hey, what do you want for dinner?" And I was supposed to say, "Oh, come on, it's 8 o'clock in the morning. It's a little hard to get excited about dinner." So I'm rehearsing and rehearsing and rehearsing. And I get walked down, you know, get into the room and they say action. And the woman reading from my mom says, "Hey, what do you want for dinner?" And I say, "It's 8 o'clock in the morning. I can't get hard about dinner."
Oh, no.
And the room was dead silent. And it was, "Thank you very much." And I walked out. And that was it. And I was like, that was my one shot in front of Gary David Goldberg. And that's the line that came out of my mouth. "I can't get hard about dinner."
Oh, no. And it was because of that, that they didn't. What?
Well, no, I don't know. It was just it was so out of left field. And so like, what the hell was that?
Oh, no. Wait,
and
so
it's
you
because
stopped
I had
or you went
rehearsed. No, I went through the rest of the scene. But by that point, the room was dead.
Oh,
there was no air left in the room. So that was my worst, funny one, worst as a kid, but my worst audition ever. And it was strictly, and it didn't even want this role all that badly, if I'm honest. It was strictly from over rehearsing. It was, I rehearsed and rehearsed and rehearsed because I wanted to walk in and nail it. I didn't care about the role. It was more about me wanting to nail it. And it was for a role in that really turned out to be not great disaster movie, The Core.
Okay.
Where the core of the earth stops spinning. So they have to go to like the center of the earth. Stanley Tucci was brilliant, but you know, it wasn't the best movie in the world.
Got it.
And I read for the part of Rat, who was the computer hacker guy. And the guy they ended up casting has always played the computer hacker and is brilliant. So they would have cast him anyway. Even if I went in and nailed this thing, this was obviously the guy that was supposed to play the role. Mm-hmm. But I couldn't get through it. I kept stopping and starting myself to the point where the casting director stopped the recording and walked up to me and was like, are you okay? Like, you need to relax. And I had already done Boy Meets World. Like, I had been an actor for years by this point.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I had so over rehearsed it that I couldn't get through that. And I remember going kind of like, thank you. And like, I'm not sure I ever even finished the audition. It was just harsh. So those are my two. What do you got?
Cool. So yeah, I mean, I'm trying to think of if I've ever had a bad voiceover audition. And I can't say that I have, because I really feel like when you go in, especially if you go into a studio and they have a director there and they really are rooting for you to do a good audition.
Sure.
Whereas I feel like when you go into a theater audition or a in-person camera, whatever, audition, I feel like you're wasting their time, you know? And it's like,
I can see that. That's kind of an interesting way to look at it. Yeah, you do get that vibe sometimes.
Totally.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like they've got a problem. And then I say in acting class, they're always like, well, just act as if you're there to solve their problem. It's like, I can't do the mental gymnastics. It's hard. So that's why voice acting is so freeing, even in the, it's also so validating, even in the process, the audition process. It's like, you know what? I did my best work. And I think when you take out the stress of all that, for me in particular, I can give my best performance or a better performance more consistently, or at least that's what I think. You know what I think? Okay. I'm trying to think. There was only one time I did a voice acting audition with the lady who is a big, she casts for all like the McFarlane shows.
Okay.
Anyway, she was very specific about me coming in and auditioning for something. And she was really trying to help me, but it almost seemed like she was almost trying to reinvent my voice talent. And she was trying to kind of really, quote unquote, dig deep into me becoming sort of a different voice or finding a voice inside me, bringing it out. Now, that being said, I appreciate that she took the time to do that on a casting level. But when you think about somebody who's trying to cast versus somebody like Andrea Romano, mm-hmm. who's literally able to pull something out of you because I don't know if it's her philosophy about life.
It's a different style. It's just a different, you get that with on-camera actors too. I mean, you get some on-camera directors, you know, they just have different styles, you know. George Lucas, who does all the Star Wars movies and everything else, famously does not like actors, has said, if I could replace all actors with robots, I would. Hmm. So there's some people that just, they don't have the, it's not even a talent. It's just the capacity to pull that out of an actor. I mean, there's certain, I always use Arnold
Schwarzenegger. You have to love actors. That's what it is. Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head.
But it's also how you have to work with him. I use Arnold Schwarzenegger as an example. Like Arnold Schwarzenegger, people are like, God, he's really not that great an actor. But if you watch Arnold Schwarzenegger in a James Cameron movie, he's awesome. So it's like, for some reason, James Cameron can pull a performance out of Arnold Schwarzenegger. Mm-hmm. So there's certain directors and certain actors that when they work together, you're like, that's great chemistry. That works really well. And Andrea has that, you know, Lisa Schaefer has that. So I would argue Sam Riegel has that.
Totally.
Colette Sunderman has that. There are some people that you just, when you work with them, they are supportive and they know you as an actor well enough to maybe say what you need to hear, maybe say what you don't need to hear, but need to hear, if that makes any sense. And they can get what they need from you.
Yeah.
I'm still dying to know though what your bad show audition was.
I have two. Okay. So one, and actually both of them were theater. Okay. So that's interesting. The first one was Westport Playhouse, right?
Okay.
They in Connecticut, where we're from. Yep. They have Shakespeare there, and they have they had Romeo and Juliet, and I was so excited, and I really tried to understand. I'd never done Shakespeare. I wasn't trained in this.
A whole different beast. Yeah,
dude, so hard to remember those lines.
Oh yeah, Shakespeare.
Yeah, and I'd been doing, and I had done, you know, Broadway productions and theaters and stuff like that.
It's a whole different thing. Yeah.
I go and I try so hard. And just like you said about that one audition, I stumbled through the entire Juliet, you know, balcony scene. And I literally had
Foot light through window breaks.
No, I see, that's not English. That's not
English. 'Tis the East and Juliet is the sun. Arise, fair sun, and kill thy envious moon who is
sick. You can do Shakespeare.
I can do that scene. I mean, that's it. I can't do Shakespeare at all. No, I can't. I cannot do Shakespeare at all. It is a different language. I mean, it's a different language. Yeah.
So yeah, I basically walked into another country and tried to speak the language like I'd been speaking it professionally.
That's a perfect way to, that's a perfect analogy for Shakespeare.
It was really devastating and also humbling. I think it was really humbling, and it gave me so much more respect for people, because I think that I had thought as a young performer, I must've been like 16, 17. It was before Disney though. So maybe, was it before Disney? I think it was about 16. And I was just cocky. And I was like, you know, I'd done theater, and then you go and you try and do the Shakespeare thing, and you're like, oh no, this is not the same.
Totally different thing.
And then I also was super humbled on my birthday of all days.
Happy birthday.
Oh,
what
my
happened?
Gosh. There was this play called Vanities that was really popular and ended up going, I think, like to Broadway something like years ago. I think I was turning like 24. And it was my birthday, and I hadn't really gone out for a lot of musical theater auditions. Like, just being in LA, you don't get a ton of them. And so I was like, okay, this is a big deal. They're out here in LA. I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to go to the juice bar, and I'm going to get like a special drink or whatever and make sure my voice is all good. Well, I get this special drink, and it's my birthday, right? So I'm like, okay, I'll get this drink. It'll just put me in the mood to really like have energy, and I'll feel like clean. Well, it has cayenne pepper in it.
Oh no.
And some people, I think, in terms of their vocal like workings,
pepper's bad, right?
Some people do really well with cayenne pepper, but it has to be, I think, a certain amount. And I think it has to be counterbalanced in terms of the acidity or the, you know, like you have to have slippery elm mixed in with, you know, throat coat or whatever with a little cayenne pepper, maybe. Because I think I had remembered there was a really amazing singer on a show I did called Parade on Broadway. And he had this throat coat that he would mix with some cayenne pepper. And I was like, oh, cayenne pepper will help.
Okay.
And turns out that it like took my voice like completely away from me.
Oh no.
I tried to do my best, and I just botched that whole audition. I botched the music. I botched the music I'd prepared. I forgot the words. It was like just such a cluster F. And I think, I don't know. I think maybe in retrospect, it humbles you, and in terms of being an artist. And I think there's something to be said for, you know, being an artist is a very, like, it's not the best. You are tortured in one way or another.
Yeah, again, it depends. There's obviously certain things in my career that I look back at and would do differently and everything. But to me, being an artist is the best. I love it. Even the horrible parts of it, I love. But I have to imagine that's life, you know? There's good and bad in everything you do. I always joke about never wanting children. I'm guessing, since so many people are doing it, there's good parts in that as well.
I don't know what they are,
but they're probably there. So, I mean, I think, you know, it's one of those things where I was never... See, it's so funny because I never considered myself an actor. If that sounds strange, but I didn't. I always consider myself an entertainer because I like to entertain people. The idea that I'm going to go off and my goal is to go star in some movie to try to win an Academy Award, that ain't never going to happen, nor was it ever going to happen, nor was that ever my goal.
Okay.
I don't have those skills to go and wow. Like you say, Shakespeare. I don't have that. I can do Shakespeare.
That's not your calling. So
no, it's a whole different beast. And I can't wait for you to hear the Steve Bloom interview about how he got started and his first job. He literally went from a mailroom and did this voiceover job for a friend of his making sounds for pizza. That's what got paid. He got paid pizza to go to do his first job ever.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So it's, you know, it's
been some good pizza.
You don't know where people can start or what they can do, but.
Well, but then it's interesting, like when you say, like, in terms of what your goal was, your calling, so to speak, like you knew you had a relationship to your art form in a very intimate way.
My art form consisted of, until I really learned how to make people laugh the right way, my art form as a kid consisted of walking into a room and essentially yelling, "Everyone look at me." That was my art form. I wanted to be the center of attention. I wanted to make people laugh. I wanted to use the comedy I saw on TV and the Michael J. Fox's timing and Alan Alda's timing. That was until I really got on the set of Boy Meets World and had an opportunity to work at the craft every week and to find out that it was comedy is a song. And so the second I started to hear it and not only could play on beat, but play off beat, that's when I was like, oh, I get this now. But that took me years. I was 20 by the time I figured that out.
Interesting.
And then there's a whole different song with voiceover. To bring it back to VO, there's a whole different song with VO. And you see people, you stand next to men and women that hear the song louder than you do, can interpret it better than you do, can play it better than you. I mean, there's just, if you're in any talent business, talent related business, there will always come a time where you're standing between two people who are better at whatever you're doing than
you're humbled.
It's
just
the way it is.
But I guess it's what you do with that humility. Like, it seems like you had this dictativeness, especially having been contracted to continue to show up and be on that show, that you had to fail upwards.
Oh yeah. Well, I just loved it. To me, I never saw it as failing, even though it was. I mean, you know, we always talk about how in this industry you say no, everyone says no 1,000 times before you hear a yes. It was, you know, there was I've talked about this kid. His name was Mike Moran. He was like my commercial nemesis when I was growing up because he booked every single commercial in New York.
Yeah.
He named it and this kid booked it. And yeah. I'd walk in and I'd see Mike Moran and I'd be like, well, there's no point in me staying here anymore. He's going to be selling
Cheerios.
Have you
Googled him?
I have not. I have no idea.
Oh my God. I love doing that sometimes where I'm like, where are they now? Where are the people that I grew up? I want to look up Mike Moran. What state was he in?
Well, this was in New York at the time. I don't know where he was from, but he booked. Okay.
Were you guys like friendly? Did you just have?
Yeah, it was always kind of like the, hey, how you doing thing. But always booking, like he got the big Michael Jordan Coke commercials.
You're like,
and, like,
oh,
all
Mike
that kind
signed
of stuff.
In on the chart.
Yes, you'd see the sign-in sheet and be like, oh, Mike Moran, my nemesis.
Mike Moran is here.
I'm 12 years old. How do I have a nemesis already? But it was
That's
true.
So funny. A call sheet or not a call, a sign-in sheet is what you do when you walk in to an audition.
Just a sheet that you have to sign in your name and your agent. And
you tend
you
to like
the
look
people.
At the names.
Yep. You do. You look at everybody else. And you have to keep in mind for a lot of the stuff I was auditioning for back in the late 80s, early 90s in New York, the names on the list were Leonardo DiCaprio, Tobey Maguire. It was that whole crew. Was
really?
All,
so you saw
absolutely.
Them in the rooms? I didn't know that.
Oh, of course. These were all, you know, we were all auditioning for all the same
stuff.
I didn't
know you
were all the same
Leo.
Age.
Yeah.
I mean,
sure.
I don't know. I don't know Leo at all. I'm not sure I've ever, other than, hey, what's up? I never shook the man's hand or said, you know.
No, but you
but
were
been
kids,
in the same room with
you
them.
Know?
You know, oh, sure.
Yeah,
of course. We
that's
were all
really
in that same.
Interesting.
Kind of crew, so
yeah. What a weird, wacky world.
So we would be remiss, though, Christy, if we because unfortunately we've got this episode is not going to be very long. but we need to talk about some very important things. We have.
Someday we'll have to talk about like how we got Kim and Ron and all that.
We're going to do an entire episode about Kim and Ron. That's another one we're going to do.
Okay, cool.
But when we're going to do that? We're going to do that. We're going to do an episode where we're going to bring on as many people from Kim Possible as possible.
Oh, that'd be fun.
And we're going to all talk about Kim Possible. So everyone will be here.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robey,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
Thank you for taking the light, and you're going to shine it all over the world, and it makes me really happy.
I never imagined that I would get the chance to carry this honor and help be a part of this legacy.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
I'm preaching to somebody today who is waiting for God to give you your next step. and you don't know what it is yet. You need God to show you your next step. Because God, I can't stay where I am, like I am, where it is. This isn't going to work. I have to move on, but I don't know where. A lot of time you'll use it as an excuse. Well, I don't know how. I don't know where. I don't know what. God, if you show me. God, if you tell me. God, if... No. You know enough right now. And if you needed to know more, he would show you.
Hey, this is Stephen Furtick. I want to invite you to listen to my podcast, Elevation with Stephen Furtick. I am here to help you for the battles that you face in life, for the times when you feel discouraged, for the times that you need guidance from God. I want to give you the truth of what he says about you to help you rise to your full potential. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and I'm back for another season of my podcast, Climbing in Heels. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as fully obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. My podcast, Climbing in Heels, is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season, we're taking things up a notch. I'll be talking to some incredible women across so many industries, from models and beauty industry stars to doctors, entrepreneurs, and TV personalities. Climbing in Heels is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Every week, listeners will be able to ask me any questions. I'm answering it all. My life is absolutely crazy with so much going on, and I'm so beyond excited to bring you along for the ride. Whether we're talking red carpet looks, current trends, or products I'm obsessed with, I'm here to be your fashion fairy godmother. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We'd like to talk about the super awesome contest to become the next big voiceover actor, because we're still, as you must imagine, figuring out all the legal stuff, because there's so many moving parts.
I was going to say, why is it so legal?
Well, it's legal because there's so many things you're going to win. We've talked about, you get flown out to Los Angeles, you're having lunch with us, you win $1,000, you're recording stuff for I Hear Voices. You win, and this is just the most insane thing in the world, a one-year contract. And anytime I talk to another voiceover actor and I tell them that that's one of the prizes, they freak out.
Yeah, like, their mouths open. And amazed. They're like, are you kidding me?
You are giving away a one-year contract with a voiceover agency. Getting an agent in Hollywood is the most difficult thing to do in any part of the business.
Look, I want to call it a big break, but Will doesn't want to call it a big break. It's
because it's a possibility of your big break, because you've got to still make your break.
That's true.
Somebody can't give you your big break. You've got to earn your big break.
There's no such thing as a big break, but if there was, this would be it.
This would be it. You're going to earn your stripes, but we're going to open the door. That's how I look.
Well, and I think them doing the contest is part of the earning.
Absolutely. You know, like, absolutely. It's going to be so much fun. But until then, as Christy was saying, first of all, I think I can speak for everybody in the audience, Christy, when I say feel better.
Aww,
you are a super mom and super wife, and you had everything going on. And so you did it all while being sick. But now you need to take care of yourself a little bit, because we got big things happening, yo.
You got to
take care of your health.
I'm bouncing back, and we're gonna find a star.
Gonna find the next big voice actor. We are not looking for a contest winner. We are looking for a colleague. So that is what we are out there trying to find, and we will. So until then, if you think you have what it takes to step up to the microphone, then put your voices where your mouth is. It's coming, people. Get ready.
I Hear Voices is hosted by Will Friedle and Christy Carlson Romano. Executive produced by Will Friedle, Brendan Rooney, Amy Sugarman, and Vicky Ernst Chang. Our executive in charge of production is Danielle Romo. Our producer is Lorraine Virouez, and our editor/engineer is Brian Burton. And that was my announcer voice.
Some side effects of listening to I Hear Voices are sore abs from hilarity, falling down the Coco Melon rabbit hole, sneezing due to mass nostalgia, and hugs.
Follow I Hear Voices wherever you listen to podcasts so you don't miss any of the amazing voices.
Be sure to follow us on Instagram and TikTok at I Hear Voices Podcast.
You can also check us out on MySpace, Omegle, Vine, LimeWire, AAM, and Napster.
Okay, well, let's teach you about the internet.
The who?
Ladies and gentlemen,
we are coming back to Atlanta.
Right now.
Whoa. Mark your calendars, because the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts. but we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robay,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
I am so excited about this podcast, The Bright Side. You guys are giving people a chance to shine a light on their lives, shine a light on a little advice that they want to share.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
My whole life, I've been told this one story about my family, about how my great-great-grandmother was killed by the mafia back in Sicily. I was never sure if it was true, so I decided to find out. And even though my Uncle Jimmy told me I'd only be making the vendetta worse, I'm going to Sicily anyway. Come to Italy with me to solve this 100-year-old murder mystery. Listen to The Sicilian Inheritance on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.